get ready for stand up.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, Honky, and I'm with Mac.
Hey, Redcasters. I'd like you all to join me in wishing the man to my right here a happy anniversary. 20 years in the books. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. Okay, we're going, well, we can also wish the exact same thing to the guy across from us here, Redcast Rob. Dave is just logging in here, so he's going to be getting in here in a second. And Boomer is somewhere in Wahoo and should be here by about halfway through the streets. So, so Redcast Rob, who also has an anniversary, your hot take.
I mean, first of all, happy anniversary to you and Kathy Honky, and especially happy ninth anniversary to my wife, Rachel. We were joking tonight at dinner with my whole family before the show tonight that I've been married for 19 years, nine of them to Rachel. So
they love that.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of funny too, because subsequently I was just sitting there, we were all having a conversation. I got my head turned, server comes around and bringing drinks. And all of a sudden I've got lemonade and water dripping down me. She dropped her tray as she was coming past me and just dumped water and lemonade all over me at the restaurant. So that was really fun. I'm not going to lie.
Sounds sticky.
I showered twice before tonight's show.
Very nice. Here, we're going to bring Dave in. Dave, I hope you have your Dave, do you have your headphones on there?
Yeah. Do you hear me, guys?
Yeah, we hear you.
Great.
All right. Rock. Excellent. We're good to go.
Welcome to the Go. I have a lot of practice, Honky, and StreamYard apparently forgot who I was. I literally was like, it like normally just lets me log on, and that's not the case any longer. So I guess that's what happens when you take a few months off of the show.
No worries. And Boomer's going to have you beat. He'll be here probably in a half hour. He thinks he was somewhere by Wahoo about 10 minutes ago when he was texting me. So, but he thinks he'll get in here in the middle. This is a good chance here. We'll just go real quick through our sponsors and upcoming stuff. And then we have a full show of this is midsummer check-in. A lot of things going on. We have Alumni Hall, and you'll see their logo up here on our top left. We have two Lincoln locations with that, downtown and South Point Pavilions. Downtown's at 1120 P Street. Next is Pipeline Jerky, pipeline-jerky.com. Use Redcast, officially gets you 10% off. Let's get some more guys onto the pipeline and use that NIL to go towards that. And then last but not least here, we have the Smack and Smooch. I am wearing a Smack and Smooch hat that they just got me. Mac, you got another one of the Redcast hat.
I had to give this one away because it was so popular.
I'm wearing Generation Red t-shirt today, and that was made by Smack and Smooch as well. So out to Ken and Scott with those guys out there at the Generation Red.
Honky, yeah. We shouldn't forget about the battle in Boulder as well, being put on by our good friends at the Big Red of the Rockies out there in Estes Park. They're going to be having that huge celebration Friday, September 8th, before the game there in Boulder versus that team whose name. I can't remember. That other team that we'll be playing week two. They're a FCS school, I think, or something that we'll be playing in week two.
Portals. Yeah.
The Colorado Community College. We should think about that too. Our good buddy Gary is out there. He's putting it on. He wants you to go online. You can buy tickets for it. Spend the night up in Estes, since Boulder is going to be super expensive. And, make sure that you get out there. You can meet Tommy Frazier and, we'll have a good time. I think some of the members of the Redcast might even make it out.
Yeah. I was just in Estes, Rob, actually, over the weekend, and chatted with the guys at Big Red of the Rockies. And, it's going to be a big shindig. They've got a hotel there, and I think it's, 34 miles, which actually takes probably, a little under an hour because it's a little curvy, but to your point, I think it is relatively convenient and would be a lot of fun that Friday night.
Yeah. And if you've never been to Estes Park, Colorado, and you're visiting from Nebraska, if you want to get like a nice Colorado experience while in town and not having to spend the night in Boulder, which nobody ever wants to spend the night in Boulder. head up to Estes Park because it's beautiful up there, and especially this time of year in the end of summer when the rivers are flowing and everything. So,
yep. Well, let's get to what we want to talk about, and this is midsummer. It's been a good month, and on the left here, we have to give a shout out to ourselves. Give a shout out to graphic designer Swobes.
Love that guy.
He created the Go Big Redcast logo, one of the greatest logos in the history of logos. In fact, the at Podpoll, it even said introducing your 2023 Podpoll Best Logo Tournament Champion. This was national. The Go Big Redcast.
I didn't know that.
It was the bane of Texas Tech, the circle with words, the logo they love to hate. The number of fans or number of other opponents we had that somehow took offense to the fact that we just had, you know, words inside a circle and that didn't qualify as a logo because they're 4-year-olds, as they said. One, the Texas Tech folks said our 4-year-old can draw that. And I was like, oh, well, a lot of 4-year-olds can draw arches. Or,
why wouldn't they just use a computer? That 4-year-old would just use a computer.
I was going to say a 4-year-old can draw arches or they can draw, you know, a swoosh too. I mean, it's not, I didn't realize it had to be a,
I mean, I have a literal 4-year-old who probably could draw this. I'm not going to lie, but you know, it's at just the same time. It's it's recognizable across generations, right? So I guess you could say we're a generational logo.
Mm-hmm. Well, in addition to this being a good month, as Abby has already said here, when she said it's been a busy month for multiple sports, on the right, she goes, okay, just humor me. And this is from the 16th of the month. Rule awakens Nebraska by going Rule year 2 and year 1. Cook plus Larson. So Jordan Larson's come back for volleyball. Plus, of course, we have all the good news with what's going to be happening on volleyball day in August. With breaking, not just, as you said, Mac, on one of the shows a while back, when Trev gets pissed about something, when Trev gets, you know, really competitive, this wasn't just like we're going to, let's just beat Wisconsin's 17,000 or wherever they had show up at the Kohl Center last year. We're going to destroy it. We're going to have 30,000, 40,000 people come out. And instead, it's going to be an international world record. It
shoots way over that into ridiculousness. And
I mean,
it's pretty fantastic.
It's insane. Basketball, K-State obviously came back. We've got some other guys that we've been in on. With softball, Jordan Ball. I mean, like, this is the Heisman winner.
That one's
the
big one, huh?
That's huge. Pitching staff, Dave, maybe this would be a chance to kind of get you in here. Even like the pitching staff, you know, getting Childress elevated up into it. Now that we brought in a couple of pitchers too, you know, so, I mean, all of these different programs seem to be on a
pretty solid spot. You know, they say the pitching coach is like the offensive coordinator for football.
Nobody says that, Mac.
I listened to that Matt's rule. That was a good one there, Mac.
That's how it was presented to me. But
that's one way to think of it.
Yeah.
Maybe more of a defensive specialist. Yeah,
doesn't he
know.
Just tell him to throw strikes? No.
Yeah.
You idiot. Yeah. I'm like, I'm damned.
I want to add a little bit to the logo contest because I feel like we're not actually, I mean, even though you praise Swobes, you aren't actually giving him the real credit due here. I mean, like Rob said, like my 4-year-old could draw that too. Well, like, a bunch of people can replicate anything, right? But actually coming up with something original that's memorable is a lot harder. And I think that what Swobes has done with our logo is a stroke of genius, really, right? I mean, it's simple, it's memorable, it tells you what it does, and it's ours, right? And I think what most of the folks in that poll don't actually get is that logos with a bunch of crap thrown on them are crap, right? And so I don't think we could have done that. You could replicate that, but you would have done it yourself.
Dave, I can
want to make sure we give him credit for that.
Dave, I can promise you I couldn't have done it because I had a shot at creating our logo and what, and you know what it was. What was I planning?
It was the outline of Platte County, Nebraska.
Yeah, because we were going to be called the Platte County Boys. So graphic designer Swobes is widely known, not only a great graphic designer. And he is. He's done this for 30 years. He's also the man behind the name.
Yeah,
we wouldn't be the Go Big Redcast if it wasn't for Swobes. Nope. And
we really should have a Swobes Day.
Well, he'll be on a he'll be on a fan forum at some point here.
All right.
Yeah, but I appreciate that, Dave. I think that's a. There's a lot of kudos that should go out to Dan for that. And he's done a great job with it. And Husker fans, we don't lose Twitter polls anyway. Yeah, but, I mean, we should for that. That's a damn good logo. So
you're right too, Dave. You know, I joke about the 4-year-old thing because that's kind of the argument that we got into with that guy. But I mean, I even made that point to that guy, like saying basically, thank you very much for the compliment, because everything that you just said that was bad about our logo is actually why it is so good. Right. Like, yeah, I got into that argument with him on Twitter. I mean, I have a degree in marketing and advertising, so I know what works and what doesn't work. And nobody forgets. I have Redcast stickers on my car, and people come up to me like frequently, especially here up in Greeley. There's a ton of Nebraska fans out here, and I've had people ask me about it. Like, where'd you get that sticker? And
yep.
When I have a degree, I usually just hand it out. But
I have a degree in advertising. I still thought Platte County was going to be good. So, but as we look at the fans, though, I mean, think about that. Now, I asked this Twitter poll here. It was, tell us your current state of Husker football fandom. And this could be more than just football. This could have been, I think, all sports. But I did want to keep it just to football based off that last tweet where, you know, we were talking about all the sports are going pretty well. But anyways, wanted to kind of gauge it. And 18.8% said no emojis, just prove it. So that was really the, you know, let's be as real as you can. Stop, you know, stop with any of the you know, pump the brakes kind of thing. Cautiously optimistic, 45%. Drunk on Kool-Aid already, 35%. Other 1%. I was almost a little bit surprised that drunken Kool-Aid was that high. I thought we'd have a little more of the no emojis.
What just do you think I voted?
Oh, you're drunk on Kool-Aid already. And yeah, bring it up, Rob. There you go. Of course, he has the picture of Kool-Aid. But I figured, just knowing Husker Nation the way they tend to be, especially on Twitter, that no emojis would be a third, or, you know, maybe even up to 40%. So to only be at 18%, to have, you know, cautiously optimistic made sense to be number one. That seems like that seems like cautiously the best, you know, answer there.
That's probably what I would have voted.
But, you know, I guess I'll start with you, Dave, here. You know, I think people, there's a lot of good things going on right now. Today, we're going to get to talking about recruiting, and the recruits are coming in. And I think Husker fans are really liking what they're hearing and what they saw in the spring ball. They like the fullback. They like getting under center. They like the physical stuff. So it still has to equate into wins, and we haven't seen any of that yet. You know, you got to wait till the season and the games for that to happen. But it certainly seems like people are on board with what Coach Rule's doing.
Yeah, I think so. It's hard not to some degree, right? And I think the poll here shows that, right? I mean, I think you can be – I mean, yeah, I mean, the poll is well worded, right? Because you can be cautiously optimistic and not be expecting to go to a bowl, right? I mean, it depends on how you define that, right? But what's hard to argue is that Matt Rule has done a lot of good things over the first 6 months of his tenure here, 6-7 months, right? And so that part is really, you know, hard to dispute. And so, I mean, it's easy to be cautiously optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think some of the things, we're going to have a mailbag at the end of this, and some of the questions start to become expectations, and we're going to get that from some of the people. What are your expectations? And that doesn't always have to be a number thing. It doesn't have to be saying 8-4 or 6-6 or 10-2. It can be, you know, winning the line of scrimmage, or beating, you know, splitting Iowa and Wisconsin, or whatever it is, you know, ending a streak. You know, there can be a number of things that can be an expectation. Mac, I'll ask you, as you look at this, where would you put yourself in with those three?
Cautiously optimistic, but that is considerably higher than I would have thought myself to be at this point when Rule was hired, even. Like, even when he was hired, I was like, it seemed like the right hire, everything like that, and I was okay with the hire, but he seemingly, like, almost weekly got out some kind of news that I had approve of, and things that you and I might have spoken about need to happen. The in-state recruiting is obviously one of them. The way the camps are set up, the way he's running those are one of them. The big recruiting weekends that actually result in commitments at the end of those weekends. You know, usually it's just a bunch of flash and cash, and it's like, and then everybody goes home, and it's like, well, it was a great visit. I rated a 9 out of 10. We never hear from him again. You know, and so that's been happening. Like you talk about, oh, we're going to go under center. You know, we're going to huddle. We're going to go to the dormitories for fall camp. I love everything he's saying. The fact that our transfers are coming in the way they have been. I guess what I'm saying is, for me to be cautiously optimistic and no emojis, just prove it, speaks volumes to what he's done thus far. I'm fully and cautiously optimistic. I don't think I could be drunk on Kool-Aid. I just don't think I could be for this. And I don't know how that, between now and the start of the season, I couldn't imagine something like going much better than it has to put me in that category. We got to win something. It, like, now we beat Minnesota by any margin, who knows? You know?
if we beat Minnesota by any margin, I'm going directly back to Jerry's house, and I will be doing remaking the Kool-Aid video that I always post on Twitter of the guy like opening up the shower curtain and pouring Kool-Aid all over himself. Oh. I will remake that video if we beat Minnesota.
That works for me. Well, let's get to the recruiting.
Real quick, though, but where are you at with that?
Oh, I think cautiously optimistic is, well, no, you know what? I'm drunk on Kool-Aid of what he's doing is right.
Yeah,
for sure. And drunk on Kool-Aid doesn't mean that I think we're going to go 10-2. Drunk on Kool-Aid means that what he's doing is the right thing.
Iowa and Wisconsin.
I don't even want to get to that yet. Drunk on Kool-Aid really means that what they're doing with the program right now, from in-state recruiting, from strength and conditioning. When you see Gabe Urban today, the photo of him, like, oh, I'll send it to you.
Some comments on that.
But more than just that, it's the fullback. It's under center. It's you know, getting in a huddle. It's slowing down and playing good football again. And that's what he wants to, you know, the details, all the fine details, hearing in-state coaches talk about him the way that they're talking about him. All those things have me drunk on that Kool-Aid.
Even the players, even when we lose a quarterback, the number one quarterback in the nation, we settle for an Elite 11 quarterback from our own backyard.
Yes,
simultaneously brings in two wide receivers from the same school that we really wanted on top of it. So it's like, pretty good falling up.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, because Tony, who's a longtime listener and my nephew of the show, he thought maybe that was one of the better things that did happen to us was not getting Raiola, so that we did get Kalen, so that did secure the Bellevue guys. And I don't know that I could argue with that. You could make the argument that who knows what it came with Dylan had Dylan committed here, but it's more fun to talk about the way Tony did. That's more Kool-Aid-ish to talk about it that way, but it's a good point.
Well, I mean, here you've got
those are great graphs. Oh, is that a real one? Or did somebody make that one?
That Calabrasco one. Yeah, this gets us into the recruiting.
It's like an 80s movie poster.
But it's not bad. If I was any one of those players, I'd have that on my wall.
This gets us into the recruiting segment here. And Calabrasco, I saw this out there on Twitter a couple days ago. And then you see the new one here, and it's the triplets from Bellevue West, Hall, Kalen, and McMorris. And you know, so Calabrasco, what it is, it's part of a in-state recruiting surge that we have going on. It's also part of an amazing month of June commitments here.
Yeah.
And it kind of culminated today with Carter Nelson's picked us over Alabama, over Georgia, over, you know, the who's who of college football.
Serious offers from those programs too, not just.
Yeah, they weren't fake ones. They were
formidable offers. The coaches went to the schools and saw.
Can I just say real quick, Honky, you did such a good job on this graphic. Like, my Lord, if you're not watching us on YouTube, or if you're just, you know, if you're just listening to the podcast at any point, go back and check out YouTube. Go to this point in the show and look at this graphic that Honky put up, because this didn't just take him like a couple minutes to do. This was like some work to put in, man. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, this is just kind of it's a collage. I've done a little collage work myself, but this is in June. We had, I think it was 13 commits that have happened this month, but that's just for the next year. There have been some other commits too, walk-ons that are going to be part of this next season. And what's really interesting is the reliance on having guys come into camp and seeing them. Dave, I'll send this over to you here. We've seen, This is part of me being drunk on Kool-Aid too, is I love the idea of evaluating players through camps and everything, not just based off of star systems. You know my thoughts on those over the years. I'm not a star guy. Neither is Coach Rule. I mean, they'll offer a guy that has no offers. But you look through this list here, and we've got guys, the kicker, Sam Cook's son, was here at a kicking camp. We gave a walk-on, preferred walk-on to a JUCO and a transfer that went to the JUCO transfer camp.
Let's hear for JUCOs.
We've had linemen come to lineman camps. So when you look at this list here just as a whole, Dave, I mean, what are your thoughts on what we're getting done with here in June?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think we could talk about this for a long time, to be honest with you, because we've been talking about recruiting on this show since day one, really. And I mean, you've had this fundamentally difficult question of like, what does a star mean, right?
What does a star mean?
Right. And I think this actually illustrates what a star should mean. And then that's actually, it's from the recruiting services, it's their opinion on the value of how good a player is. But the reality is that every coaching staff should be doing their own evaluations. And I think, you know, a lot of coaching staffs, even though they get paid $5 million a year, and this is not just talking about Nebraska coaching staffs, other coaching staffs are really maybe too lazy about this. And you need to trust your own eyes. And the thing is, you need to actually see these players and all this type of stuff. I think it's really interesting in the sense that, so we've got, 14 commitments in June? Is that right?
I think, yeah, it was either 13 or 14. I think it's someone following along that knows the answer.
It's 14 today. Okay. I think it was 14 today.
And like, I mean, maybe seven of them are, to your point, Honk, not highly recruited guys. These are three star guys that maybe just got that third star because they got an offer from Nebraska, have some other, middle tier type offers, like the legacy, like Quinn Clark is number one recruit out of Montana, but he doesn't have like a bunch of Power Five offers, obviously. Right. But I mean, like, I think it's interesting in the sense of like this evaluation of like, okay, so you get your big board at the beginning of the recruiting process for a year and you go after your most sought after talent and you start establishing relationships via text and emails and you go visit the kid in the school and all this type of stuff. And then you hope that they come and visit. The key is to get them to Nebraska. Right. And they have a bunch of maybe other offers and sometimes you get some of those and sometimes you don't. Right. In this instance, and then we're saying that Matt Rhule and his staff haven't done that. They've had a big board for 6 months, but some of these guys, they essentially saw at a satellite camp, maybe in early June, right? Is that about how that works time-wise? Yeah. I can't recall.
Yeah, some of the Texas kids. Yeah.
Liked what they saw, invited them to come and do an official visit at Nebraska. They established a relationship at that point. They haven't even really, had that. And then they're on campus. They have an official offer either before or after that happens, and they commit shortly thereafter. I mean, it's like, bam, right? And I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, just in the sense of, I think that, you know, if Matt Rhule and his staff's eye for talent, and I think he actually has a pretty good reputation for this already, considering some of the hits he had at Temple and Baylor, recruiting under the radar guys, if these guys have good senior years at Texas, and they know that Matt Rhule offered them, that they're going to get some additional attention, right? We're going to have to continue to recruit some of these guys, even though they were under-recruited now. By the time they sign in December, I mean, you might see some of these guys elevate in the rankings, right? That's what I hope anyway.
Yeah, especially after their high school season.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and if they're not, then that's also an interesting discussion point, right? But I mean, I think it's really interesting that if they believe in their evaluation process, believe the eye test, they also do lots of metrics, so they combine all of that. And they get guys on campus, and it speaks to how well Rhule and his entire staff can communicate their vision and mission and get people to buy in very quickly. Because if that's not happening, these guys wouldn't be committing so fast, right? And they're like, hey, they believe in me before anyone else does at this level, and I'm gonna stick to that. So it'll be interesting to see how many of these guys hang around. I hope it's a high percentage. And ultimately, if six or seven of these guys from a recruiting perspective seems like a reach, if three of them end up being significant contributors, that's a better ratio than we've been doing under the previous regimes by a long shot, it feels like.
Yeah, for sure.
And honestly, I mean, think about, like, you know, we got all excited when Travis Fisher goes down and gets like four guys from Florida on the last day of recruiting process. And we're like, who are these guys? Right. Yeah. And they all left. Right.
And so, this is
better than that scenario.
Yeah, and they don't know who anyone in your class is. They don't have those relationships built up. I mean, yeah, to go back to this graphic, these were big four-star kids, every one of them. And, you know, I don't really want to talk about what their stats were at Nebraska, those three Calabrasca guys. They didn't do anything here, right? And so they were big-time recruits at the moment, and it felt like you were getting something out of it. But what the three things that I really took away from this month were – number one, the identifying players that came in here. We had guys that were no stars when they got offered. They are three stars now. That's the Nebraska bump, the Rhule bump. And if we go out and win titles at some point, they'll bump up to 4 stars and 5 stars, just that you'll get the Alabama and Georgia bumps then. But for right now, they're offering a kid that hasn't really even been evaluated, obviously, by recruiting services, because they were 0 stars and now they're 3 stars. And you know, those recruiting services don't know anything more about them other than they came to a camp and Rule offered. I think of some of the past ones that we've done. Friday Night Lights is an example where this goes back to what you said, Mac. We've brought in kids from all across the country and had big time recruits all across the country come to Nebraska for years now. And they don't walk. We don't walk away with anything from it.
No.
Hey, 10 dudes came in here, 0 signs.
Right.
You know, so the fact that this June has these kinds of results based off of the kids came in here and the kids signed, that's something. And the last thing, and this is the really important one to me, is what Carter talked about today, what really did it for him. I think he was going to come here probably anyways, but he goes to breakfast on Saturday morning in the Haymarket with his future teammates. And he's, all he talked about was how serious these other guys were. Like, it wasn't, you know, like, if this doesn't work out, we'll leave in a couple of years. Like, these guys are serious, but let's make this work here. This is, we're going to be successful at Nebraska. We're going to be serious about playing football. And he bought into those guys and that vision. And that gets to be these guys that, like, that's the culture starting to get created. I'll be extremely disappointed if in 2 years we have a Calabrasca kind of feel with this, with this group. I mean, these guys, the Kool-Aid I'm drinking is that these guys are serious to play football. They're making those relationships right now, and they're committed here.
Well, you mitigate that a lot by not going thousands of miles away to get those guys too.
Yep.
You know, if they're homegrown boys, they're more likely to stay and join in. One other thing I want to bring up with the camps too is I think it shows not just in-state players, but just within that 500-mile radius, you need to get to Nebraska camps. If you want to be evaluated by the staff, you need to get there. And if you show out there, they're going to see you. And it's an important part of their evaluation process is these camps. It's not just getting these high-ranked players to see the campus and what it looks like and what they can do for them. There's some of that for sure. But I think there's a God's honest evaluation of players going on. Because these guys recruit, I mean, maybe with the exception of a few positions, it's like it's your metrics, your height, your weight, your attitude, your speed. Your track times are huge to these guys. Oh, like, what's your track time look like?
Carter Nelson goes from being a 8-man football player a year ago that you know isn't going to be on anybody's national radar, and he jumps high jump 7 foot, and that was it.
He was talking to, I think it was Sip and Callahan. He was talking to Nick Saban, and Nick Saban said that was his film is the first 8-man film he's ever watched on a player.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy, like, for a kid in the middle of Nebraska to get in front of Nick Saban like that. I mean, speaks volumes to the kid. Speaks volumes that we got him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's really doing this based on hope. There's nothing on the field to prove what we're doing here yet. I mean, it's just reputation and a lot of good and pretty words strung together.
You know, in essence, another way to say that is some of those players might be a little bit of drink in the Kool-Aid. There is nothing to show them yet. They haven't seen it yet on the field. And Coach Rule has talked about this, that he wants players that can see that vision and get into this now, commit now.
If we say drink Kool-Aid, it looks like Rob drinks every time.
But not have to wait. Yeah, is that what he's doing? But not. But he's not just looking for players that have to wait a year or two to buy into this. Because you may miss your shot if you just sit there and wait. No, he wants guys that can buy into this vision now, be committed now. And let's get into what that in-state looks like here. This is the same graphic. I love updating this on a routine basis, and I've had to update some of these graphics 3 or 4 times in the last week because
they're very busy staff.
We keep adding new things. But in-state recruiting for 2024, the left column, we have 6 in-state kids committed. Now, according to most of the recruiting services, we have the top 4 rated players. For the people that are really big into rankings, we got the top 4 in the state with Carter Nelson and then the 3 Bellevue West guys. Uncommitted, the 2 Calebs, Caleb Benning, who sounds like he's not going to make a decision yet until sometime into the football season. Don't know anything about where that is. And then tomorrow at 10 a.m., Caleb Pyfrom, offense tackle from Omaha Central. Everything I've heard, it's down to us in Minnesota and Illinois. I've heard some rumblings that he's looking at Illinois out of that. We'll find out tomorrow. And then committed elsewhere, there were 3 players that had Nebraska offers, were committed elsewhere to P5 schools. Michael Burt and Eric Ingwersen, those are 2 tight ends from Creighton Prep and Papillion-La Vista. Burt went to Iowa, Ingwersen went to Pitt, and then Teddy Rizak from Omaha Westside went to Notre Dame. I should note that the top player in the state that just committed today, Carter Nelson, is a tight end. He's the second tight end in this class. Mm. So the likelihood of us going after a third.
I don't think we're going to get every tight end out of Nebraska year. The way we produce tight ends, it's not realistic.
And it definitely softened the blow of losing those other two.
For sure. Yeah, we need to get the best one or two, but I don't think we're getting them all.
And Dave, I'm going to go back to you with this here. I've always been big on in-state recruiting. I've also been big on the Metro. And I remember when we first started the show back in like 2017, that was where we were in a real lull of going after actual Metro kids. We'd gone almost like a decade, maybe only brought in one or two guys, and we'd lost a number of other dudes, Noah Fance and Harrison Phillips and so on. I look at this, and every year is going to be different. Last year, we had several Lincoln kids that we were going after. But right now, we have one kid from Ainsworth who's the top kid in the state that we got today. Everyone else is Metro.
Yeah,
I mean, this is 10 P5 offers to Omaha Metro, and I don't see that going away anytime soon.
I'd like it if Caleb Benning would just go ahead and commit. I'd be okay with that. I don't know if you're watching, Caleb, but go ahead and do it. It's fine. We'll do a reaction show and everything. But
same
with that Clark, man. I didn't even know Ken Clark had a son that.
Oh, the wide receiver from Minnesota.
Yeah, so we got a legacy there too.
Montana, I believe.
Montana, Bozeman, I think it's from 6'5". Again, checking boxes. Height, length. I heard he's quite quick. It's just it's interesting. Now, it needs to be said too. I remember when Frost got here and we got a whole bunch of really fast wide receivers, short guys, but they were fast. So it didn't matter because they were so fast, you know, and we were all in on them fast guys too. And then we got like a McGriff who's a really tall guy. And I'm happy to do it. You know, that's just kind of how my heart works on Husker football. I'd like to get excited about this, but it's not that I don't have the blinders off or on. I mean, I'm aware of my blind spots. I know where I can be hurt, but it's just more fun to talk about it this way. The things have changed. And I will say the speed at which these guys are committing after a hard push by the staff seems different. That seems different to me. You know, we're not really long playing or waiting out a lot of these guys. Even Carter Nelson, maybe that took a little while, but I still feel like it could have went a lot longer before he made a choice and he's already in. So that helps. You know, when we finally pivoted and went to him, he was cool about it. You know, he was quick. He's like, sorry, Mizzou, staying home. And like that, there was a nice quick transition, which made a lot of these other moves, I think, possible. So he gets a lot of credit from me.
I do think that's being the pro here, the professional in how you're recruiting players. There's a big knock, you know, a year ago on Frost with how they had recruited Rayola and whatever. Mm-hmm. Don't want to get back into that. But when you think about how Coach Rule and staff recruited Rayola and Kalen simultaneously, right, which was, it's a 1A and a 1B. And, you know, but they're not burning bridges with Kalen as they're clearly communicating with Kalen and not burning bridges with him along the way while they were trying to continue to recruit Rayola. I've heard a lot of people, some fans getting frustrated that, you know, we've been offering 0-star kids and how is this staff going to recruit against the big boys? Even when I show them, hey, we just beat Alabama and Georgia out for Carter Nelson or the running back that we just brought in from Texas, beat those schools out. It doesn't matter. Those guys don't want to hear that. They just, how is he going to do against the big boys? Well, look at how he did with Rayola. I mean, he punched with Rayola up until the last second against the top schools. And no, we didn't get him necessarily this time around, but he can always be there again. And I think it's how you kind of set a standard for how you recruit players, how you interact with them, not burning bridges along the way. And I think Rule's done a really good job with that.
The recruiting of Rayola was a net positive, regardless if we got him. I will continue to believe that. I think he pointed a spotlight on the program for a while and got other guys interested. We still got a great quarterback out of it. So I just, to me, it's whatever with Rayola. He didn't come here. It was a good recruitment, and I think he laid groundwork for, in the world we live in now, the transfer. You're only one phone call away from coming to a different school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and if you want to look at it too, I mean, because everybody wants to pay attention to, like, you know, where are we in the rankings as far as, you know, Big Ten schools or nationally, and that Nebraska's now, for according to On3's rankings, which I think they do theirs a little bit differently than the other sites. Obviously, they all have their own systems. But we're now 20th in the country as far as nationally as for the 2024 class for On3, but for 24/7, we are like, I believe we've moved up to like number 14 overall, or number, that might not be right 100%. I got to look here to make sure I'm right on that. But more importantly, we're fifth in the Big Ten. Although the schools that they have in the Big Ten for 2024 ahead of us are Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and USC is number four. Wow. So it's a little bit.
And there could be some bumps. You know, I think Kalen goes to Elite 11 and finishes in the Elite 11. He's still a three-star. He could easily go to four.
A four-star. I mean, I'm not going to get in a big chomping match, but you're in the 11 of the Elite 11, the quarterback, you're a four-star. That's stupid.
Yeah.
If your ratings mean anything, stop being dumb. That's a four.
Yeah, and on three has the same thing. We're fifth in the Big Ten now for on three, but behind Ohio State.
It's a long ways to go, obviously, on that. And there can be a lot of changes there. But, I mean, it's a good position. And I think that by having most of the class filled out this early, it does give them the ability to be maybe a little more choosy down the road here in getting guys they really want to round out the class, right? And so I don't think they needed to stretch for anybody at this point, and I think they're going to put together a top 20 class.
Yeah, and it gives them a little extra time to start looking at, like, guys who might be looking at transferring, you know what I mean? Because obviously people like that too. So it gives you a really good idea as this class gets closer to actually, like, being on campus next year, possibly some of them in the spring, you know, very, very at the end of, you know, definitely, like, by the end of May. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it's exciting stuff. It feels way more exciting than it has since, you know, you guys started doing the show 25 years ago. You know what I mean?
It's a funny thing with these.
Wait a second.
With these initial recruiting classes, though, or with all the recruiting, if anyone's recruiting with any kind of level, we're always in about a top 20 spot. I mean, we're always about fourth or fifth. And so really, nothing's changed. And it's whatever. But that just tells you how good Nebraska is on a program in itself. Even losing all of these years in a row, we can still generate enough interest that we're still a top 20-ish recruiting team. Now let's just for kicks go to a couple bowl games and win them. Put a couple winning seasons together and see if we can raise that up a little bit. But Nebraska in itself is still recruiting to that level. Matt Rhule, you know, if his evaluation is what it's purported to be, then by next season we'll already see some of the fruits of that. And then just like Rivals does anytime Alabama recruits somebody, they get a star bump. Because they should, because Alabama, I'm sure, is very good evaluating talent. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
That effect could still play a role here.
My Kool-Aid that I've been drinking is based off of that evaluation. It's based off the development too. We've been a top 20, 25 recruiting
This is all the school. Same.
Let's be a top 20 development program. If we do those two things, we'll be pretty good. Dave, before you lived out in Colorado, you live in Texas, and as much as we've had success in state with six Nebraska kids so far as part of this, we've also had six Texas kids be part of this class as well so far. That was a clear early strategy by Coach Rhule, who obviously was down there at Baylor before, but he also built a staff that had a lot of Texas connections. This was a Zach Barnett tweet from the other day, and he goes, "I received my Dave Campbell's Texas football copy today, open to a full page ad purchased by Coach Rhule and Nebraska football." Nice. Smart, but not surprising. And the photo, for those that aren't seeing this, it's Coach Rhule with some very recognizable faces down there in Texas that are part of our program now. Garrett McGuire, Bob Wager, of course, Susan Elsa, a couple others as well. So, you know, this is – Dave, you live down there. I don't know how familiar you were with Dave Campbell's Texas football. Maybe you are. But we know we've had Cody Glenn – we've had Cody Glenn on the show. He coaches down there. He's from Texas. We've had – you know, we know how important that is. What does this tell you from a strategy standpoint that that's what Coach Rhule and them are doing, getting right down there – you know, right in their faces, going down to satellite camps and getting their kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's strategic and intentional. There's no doubt about it, right? I mean, I do remember, you know, going to pick up my, you know, college football magazine and seeing high school football magazines next to it. And like, what the heck is this, right? You know, but I mean,
that's crazy.
It's a business there, right? You know, and when you have stadiums of 15,000 to 20,000 with skyboxes, it kind of starts to make sense, right? And so, I mean, I think it's a good move, something they could do every year, right? I mean, I'm sure the cost of this isn't that great, and it definitely makes our intentions known that we're going to recruit the state heavily, and I think that was, apparent with the staff he's hired. But it's coming to fruition as well. So, I think it's cool.
Outstanding. Well, I think that gets us through some of the recruiting piece. And this takes us to the second part of the show, and that is mailbag. We asked, and of course, you Redcasters, you always come to the answer there. So we're going to go through some questions that we had both through Twitter and through Facebook. And this will kind of be the second segment. So kind of two halves of one show.
Sure.
And that's how we do it, right? Let's start with Twitter here. And a couple of these are statements. A couple of them are questions. Big Red Jim, the O-line, the answer is always the O-line. I think that that's certainly something that we're seeing with this staff here. They have three interior linemen so far as part of this recruiting class. They've gone out and brought in the Utah transfer here late just to build depth. Yep. They bring in Ben Scott from Arizona State. How many, like 30, 40 starts that he's had, or 28 starts, I think, that he's had over there, been all conference, and he's pretty much our center. So, Mac, it all starts with the O-line. It starts in the trenches, right?
Yeah, 100%. It does. And I think this is where rules got me more than is strictly logical. He's got me thinking this O-line could be decent this year. And I'm serious, but a lot of it is typically what you'd want in an offensive line is guys who've been around, had a lot of starts, big and strong. Well, that's kind of what we have, you know? Mm-hmm. And if we could groom these guys into a cohesive unit, it's not a stretch to think we have a pretty good O-line. Nuri being back is humongous. Ben Scott coming on is humongous. That changes the line a lot, in my opinion. And if you have a running game that's not totally predictable and a quarterback that can be moved around in the pocket, I think we do them a lot of favors. So we'll see. I mean, the running back room looks good, so that helps the O-line too. It all starts with the O-line. Rules got me thinking, yes, but I also know that's just me being optimistic.
Well, I mean, Rules sold out on this line. I mean, he's said great things about Ben Hart and NFL kind of, you know, future with the guy.
It'd be a hell of a thing to be wrong about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to some extent, look, the realists in any of us are, we love all the things we've seen. Hey, it needs to produce wins. If we go out and go 4-8 this year, that's a problem just with a different strategy, right? I mean, at some point, if you're doing the right things, this is the thing I've said so many times, you do the right things long enough, good things are going to happen. Apparently, we weren't doing the right things then in the past. Well, if we're doing the right things right now, I'll stick to that old saying, good things should start to happen. Starts on the lines. Dave, I'll go to you with this one. This is just in general. This is going to be a coordinator's question. This is from Stephen Costello, and Stephen has been a loyal follower. He goes, with all the recruiting talk, especially the low and non-rated players, I'd like to see Rule's track record on development. Can add in both coordinators' histories as well. Thanks in advance. I don't know how much history you want to get into on this, but between Tony White and what he's done at Syracuse with the 3-3-5, between Satterfield and his history with Rule, and obviously Satterfield now is 2 years of experience at South Carolina, the SEC, you know, what are your thoughts on the coordinators as part of that development, developing the scheme, developing the players?
Oh boy, that's quite the question there. I mean, I don't know enough about either one of them, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm probably have my own questions on Satterfield more than anything, right? You know, Spencer Rattler had two good games last year, but it took him a while. And, you know, the South Carolina fan base wasn't crazy about that offense. So, you know, I mean, hopefully the returns are quicker here. And obviously he has Rule's trust. So at this point you have to go with that, right? But I don't know about Satterfield. I think Tony White seems to have a lot of good traits there that should produce on the development front, but I don't know that much. I think, you know, if you look at Rule, I mean, and I'm answering this question really poorly, guys, so help me out. But the one guy that always stands out, I think, is the one of the Baylor recruits that was a lower non-rated player. He was a defensive lineman, ended up being all Big 12 player of the year and a high draft pick. I forget his name, but he's kind of a poster child of Rule being able to evaluate and identify talent that no one else does, and then developing that into an NFL player. Right. And so I think that's what you're looking for is if again, your hit rate on these, I mean, considering the how low the hit rate, I mean, and there's been articles written about this all over the board about how poor we have been able to develop players and turn four stars into, you know, undrafted free agents, essentially. We need to be able to take three stars and develop it into NFL draft picks. And Rhule has done that at Baylor. And if he takes just a few of these guys that are seem to be under the radar and they end up being starters for us, that's going to be worth it. So, you know, it doesn't mean he has to hit on every single one of them, right?
What about this, Dave? What about as far as under the radar? He can be guys on our team right now. Like, could you pick a guy on offense or defense that you thought, man, I just don't understand why we don't hear about this guy? He was highly recruited. Or even, you know, like, is there a guy that if all of a sudden we start seeing him play after a couple years of sitting or not doing very much, would that be a good enough indicator to you? Because, I mean, with the true freshmen, especially the low star rankings, probably they're a little more developmental anyway. You got to get them size up, strength up, stuff like that. But there's guys on the team that have been in the program now that just aren't – Boomer, what's up? That just haven't produced yet. But, like, I guess –
Sure. I mean, I think you can look at the O-line and look at Ben Hart and say, like, I mean, this guy should have NFL potential, and we've yet to see it, right? I mean, if we want to focus on Satterfield, I mean, be honest with you, one of the questions that I've had, if I was in sending you guys questions, is the Jeff Sims thing, right? Because and can Satterfield actually develop Jeff Sims, right? Because he's a specimen out there. I don't remember how well he played in the spring game, but apparently it was good enough to get people excited. But if you look at what Jeff Sims did at Georgia Tech, the guy won eight games. He never started all you know, every game of any season. He is a 57% career passer. And you could say, like, well, the Georgia Tech coach wasn't any good. Well, that guy was Jeff Collins, a Matt Rhule disciple who easily could have been our offensive coordinator. I mean, it was between Satterfield and him, it felt like, right? So, like Satterfield has to prove to me that he's going to do something different with Jeff Sims than Jeff Collins was able to do in 3 years. And because, I mean, the stats don't lie. He's eight of 16 as a starter. And
he comes up on nobody's list when they talk about top quarterback transfers. He's never brought up.
On Twitter, we interacted with, I think it was College Football Focus was the one they did a top 10 quarterback transfers of the offseason, and Sims wasn't on the top 10. And the list that they had was a good list, and I even responded to him. I go, this is a good list. I think that that Sims is somebody to keep an eye on. He goes, I was close with Sims, but passing-wise, I mean, his stats are just nowhere near – what would make it a top 10 transfer. And for me, you know how my thoughts are on quarterbacks, that there's so many different ways you can rate a quarterback. And this is my history with us being an option, you know, team. I mean, for Christ's sakes, Tommy Frazier is the quarterback of the century and doesn't even have a 50% completion career percentage, you know? And what's interesting is I don't disagree 1% with him at all about maybe that Sims isn't a top 10 QB transfer. If you're talking about passing, you're talking about passing percentage, I don't. But he might be the number one QB transfer if you're talking about run game out of the QB. Okay. So back to your point there about Satterfield and tying it back to the coordinator, I don't know what that connection is between how do you take the strengths, the things I really like about Sims, the running part of it, the legs aspect, and how do you tie that in with what Satterfield can do with him, you know, from a pocket standpoint. Rhule talked about him being a pro quarterback. He certainly doesn't have the stats to date, to Dave's point, to show that. He's not going pro with what he's done in the past. Yep. How do you get what he's doing going forward to get him there?
Well, I mean, they're kind of hanging their own reputation on that. They're the ones setting the bar for Sims. No one else is saying that.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's got almost kind of like – he's like the Adrian Martinez of Georgia Tech coming to a different school, you know, like he was probably had a lot of potential, showed a lot of flash, but his numbers weren't that great when you add him up and the wins. Maybe he flourishes here under a different system, and he does have the physical tools though. Oh. You watch him; it takes him no effort to get the ball down the field 40 yards, and like if we would have had him last year throwing bombs to I cannot think of his name right now. Who's our wide receiver last year?
Oh, Palmer.
Palmer. If we'd had him throwing bombs to Palmer, you know, he actually had to run under up to get him. He would have had 1,500 yards receiving easily and about 10 more touchdowns because nobody could run with his stuff. I mean, he's the best there is.
Let's go to the next question here. This Rob, you're our Kool-Aid guy. You're our hype guy. So Kendall here, he goes, recruiting hype or truth? Question mark.
Oh, recruiting hype or truth.
Recruiting hype or truth. So right now, you know, we just
say Kool-Aid. I don't really understand it. I don't really understand that question.
Well, we just spent 20 minutes talking or 25 minutes talking about the recruiting class up to this point. Is it hype? Is it truth? You know, is it truth about the, you know, getting these guys in and evaluating them, and that's what's going to be the difference? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Why not both? I mean, you know, if it's going to be, if it's the truth is yet to be revealed really about the class, but we're getting the guys that we want, most of them, right? They're getting the guys that they want, which gives the perception that they have a plan, that they know exactly what it is they want this team to look like, not just this year, but moving forward and developing beyond this year. You know, they're already looking at guys for 25. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of like hype. There's a lot of Kool-Aid going into that because I didn't want to go there, but it does feel like there is an adult in the room, you know, or a group of adults in the room, even our like, you know, 14-year-old wide receiver coach. You know what I mean? It's like, it's still nice seeing him getting the guys locally, because you know he's involved with those local Nebraska kids that are wide receivers.
Sure. I mean, all of those Bellevue West guys.
Yeah, and they all like him. And it's like, obviously, okay, so there's the question when it came to recruiting that everyone was worried about. Now, can he coach him up and develop them? You know what? That's all to be seen. And there's a lot to look forward to, it feels like. And so that's where, for me, that is the truth, because it's giving us something to look forward to. We're probably going to see, you know, what everything, it's just hard. I mean, it's almost like we forget that there's an actual team already built right now for this season, right? Because we keep talking about the 2024 class, you know? So it's like, and there's a whole class,
but I'll say
work, but I love that because it's like a quietness that it's kind of going there, and it could, you know, I'd love to just see it erupt.
I think so. You said one thing there that really stuck. It's there's a plan.
Just one though.
Well, it was very
improvement for
us. I left to go get a drink. I'm sorry.
Very, very early in that answer, but no. But he said something. You go, there's a plan, and I think that's part of, to your point about this being the grown up and everything. There's a plan, and from day one they said, hey, we're gonna focus on Texas. And when you see the stats right now, when Gradney and Pyle and Flint and Buford and Probe and Lacey, when you see six guys already being a part of this. They've gone down and executed that plan by hitting satellite camps down there, by being in that Dave Campbell's magazine. I mean, there's a plan, and they're playing towards it. So that to me is the truth. It's not hype. It's truth. They said, we have a strategy. This is what we want to do. And they're doing it. This is a good question. I think that can go around the table for all of us. You can pick one or two. Husker Nut. And I know, because I also had Tony, your cousin, sent me something similar. How would you rank it? Or your nephew. What did I say? Cousin?
Cousin.
Nah, whatever. How would you rank as the top 5 to 10 most important players going into next season? So I guess with four of us here, pick two or three of them. Okay. Maybe we'll kind of go around. And I'll start. I'll start just so everyone has a chance to kind of think here. I'll do the obvious one, just knock them out. You got to say Jeff Sims, the quarterback, is going to be crucial with this. I also think that the center that's going to be in front of him, you know, we don't need any year one mishaps, balls going all over the place. The center can dictate so much of the blocking schemes that you're going to do. You get under center, you're getting in the shotgun. We're going to be doing different things. So Ben Scott, those two. And then the other guy, and he's a transfer, MJ Sherman. I just, what I saw out of him in spring and just the physical nature that he brings. I mean, this is a different style of athlete, I think, at that linebacker spot than we've had in a while. Those would be probably my two, three guys that I think are going to be really important players going into next year. Every one of them is a transfer. Not a single one of them were on the team last year. So I'll go to my man to the left here, Mac.
All right. So my first one on is going to be Ben Hart. I think how he plays is going to be pivotal, because he's going to play. I mean, he's going to play. If he can hold down his side, then we are going to have a really good year. I mean, I really, really feel that way. I feel like the other guys are closer, or not maybe closer, but Ben Hart needs to to improve. He needs to have a, I guess I'm going important, not necessarily best. I feel like that's important.
Important.
And then the other one would be one of those running backs. I can't say which one.
All running backs.
All running Somebody's back has to be like, I know we got a committee guy, but I want just one guy.
Do you want a bell cow?
I do want a bell cow. Okay. I want a 20 carry guy. I mean, if we're going to be this, you know, huddle I formation, sometimes team running backs do. I don't think running backs have been done a service since the spread has come along. They never get into rhythm. You know, they're constantly being moved and flanked out and everything. And really the best running happens when you get a, you know, up to your 10th, 11th carry and you start feeling everything and the game's speed's caught up. And I miss that a lot from college football. Man, I was watching long answer. I was watching these highlights from the 90s, like Kijana Carter and Timbiaka Batuka and watching these runs. I'm like, God damn, these guys were good running backs. But, you know, it wasn't until later in the game when they could slide off some tackles and they just I just missed that type of running game. And I think if we're being told right, this offense is going to need somebody like that. I think Grant could do it. I think maybe Gabe Irvin can do it. His picture today. We'll circle back to that. I got
to. Dave, how about you?
Great. Boy, I was hoping you'd go to someone else.
Well, the longer you wait, the more the names are taken. So
I'll go back to Jeff Sims, even though I've expressed my lack of understanding on the enthusiasm based off the numbers. I'm gonna say that Rule and his staff obviously believe Jeff Sims is their guy, and we did have a large quarterback room that now has been cut in half. And I'd be optimistic that we have capable backups, but none of them are proven. And so with Sims going down at any point or not performing to the level that they expect him to perform would really bring down our win total. So Sims, I think, is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter to you too, Dave, about how much they've kind of hyped him, that if he doesn't perform well, does that concern you with their evaluation?
Maybe not long term, at least short term. I mean, like I guess I get really frustrated. This does seem the exact same scenario that Frost, where he put all of his eggs in the Adrian Martinez basket, and like that's our guy. And I'm like, I get it. You fall in love with guys' attributes and all type of stuff, and he looks the part, and you're like, let's just get him out there right away, right? But I always felt like if they would have. I mean, heck, there's no reason to run Adrian Martinez out there on day one. In spring ball, you could have kept Patrick O'Brien happy, for God's sake. He would have been serviceable enough to start for the first six games of the year. And then have Gebbia still there, too, and then made Martinez third, for goodness sakes. But no, we went all in with Adrian, and it wasn't the best decision. We're going all in with Jeff Sims again.
I would say this scenario, though, is so different, though, from the first year of Frost. With, I mean, Sims, comparing him and Martinez, you're comparing
guys. He's got experience. I'll give you
playing multiple years of that. You also have two other guys on the team that have multiple years of experience in college football. With Purdy, he's made multiple starts at Florida State and Nebraska. But also Heinrich at least can run a similar style of offense as what Sims runs. So there you have two quarterbacks doing the same thing. I mean, Frost was it was beyond bizarre because it was literally you're going to a true freshman and this Jebbia guy. And that's really, you'd already run off Patrick O'Brien by the time you said we don't need Burrow. And then you get into the season, one guy gets hurt. Oh, we didn't even bother trying to get a waiver for Vedrill. So Vedrill.
Massively mismanaged.
Yeah, it just was massively mismanaged. I don't see that with this. But to your point, I mean, we weren't going to keep all six guys anyways.
No,
we're going to lose a couple of them. I don't know what we could have done to keep Thompson with where he's going to be down at Florida Atlantic or International, wherever it is with them.
I don't have any problem with how they managed it. Herman, so. I don't have any problem with how they managed the room. I mean, especially in this day and age where you can't jump ship so quick. It's not that. But what rings kind of familiar is just the eggs in the basket kind of deal like you were talking about, Dave. And then that's not untrue for a lot of programs. But I guess my thing is, for this coaching staff, if I were to give them a critique, you don't need to hype the quarterback at all for Nebraska.
That's true.
Should just leave that alone. We will hype for you, but don't hype them up first, because now our expectations are set higher than they necessarily should be, that is totally on the coaches.
I will agree with that. One of the things I liked about what we did with the quarterbacks, you've heard this before, I've always said, hey, take the green jerseys off. If you're having a competition, make it a true competition. I saw a true competition. Mm-hmm. So for my – and exactly what you just said there too. You don't need to hype up Sims to me. I like what Sims brings to an offense. Mm-hmm. The fact that they've really kind of the talent that's in that QB
every
room.
Every chance they get to praise him.
But the talent that's in that QB room matches an offense that isn't a pass-heavy offense. It's a QB – or at least it's an offense where the QB's legs are going to be involved. I mean, that's what Heinberg is. Harburg,
but that's not what they're recruiting to. They're recruiting more of that.
They are recruiting opposite. To a different thing. But for next season, year one, mobility at the QB is going to be a clear part of that offense. It would not make sense to me if they didn't use the QB's legs next year, with what they've done with that room. I mean, they wanted to sit in the pocket and throw it 40 times. I'd have kept Thompson. You know, you would have had him already to do it. Rob, how about you?
Well, I mean, you guys aren't even talking about defense yet, and that's kind of...
I said Sherman.
Did you say Sherman?
Way not to listen, Rob.
I know.
Right, you
weren't here for my last one. Well, I was going to say Quentin Newsome. I'd like to see him have a huge year this year in the secondary. Why are you laughing so hard?
Because Matt muted just a fart, and it cracked me up. Oh, sorry. Now you're...
There you go. And then, you know, it's hard to tell, too, the defensive line, there's going to be a lot of guys. I'd like to see Nash kind of have a real breakout year this year and just kind of bring it on. I think he's listed second on the depth chart right now, but still, it would be really nice to see, you know, a lot of pressure from the defensive line to give, like, you know, because in White's offense, there's a lot of motion, but, you know, that a lot of that is dependent on the guys up front kind of setting the line, right? And like, opening up some holes for the linebackers to break through. And we saw some of that in the spring game, but, you know, how is it going to look against other Big Ten opponents is my biggest question.
Yeah, D line's a huge question.
Yeah, it's huge. So, you know, I'd like to see Nash, or I think what Ty Robinson, you know what I mean? He's, you know, it'd be nice to see one of those two guys. And, you know, of course, the rest of the defensive line, it seems like it's all like freshmen and transfers. So, you know, it's really hard to know what any of those guys are going to do.
Yeah, Elijah Judy, as far as like transfers go, he's going to be a big player in this. He was one of the starters there in spring ball. Boomer, Prince welcome.
You and Ellen and
Boomer. Principal, yeah. Boomer, welcome to the show. And we left this last one to you because, I mean, I know you're going to get into special teams anyways. Who would you rank as a couple of the most important players going next season?
Well, I mean, I've literally been here the whole time you have, so that's all right. But, yeah, some of the obvious ones were named. You know, obviously Sims is critical, but you know, think of some names that haven't been. Another one would be another transfer, wide receiver Billy Kemp.
Yep,
I think he adds a lot just in terms of experience in the wide receiver room. Which, you know, I know we mentioned many shows ago when we were going through kind of the roster we had. There's kind of that huge gap in experience for wide receivers, so he's going to play a critical role there.
And he's a returner.
We're going to be returning punts most likely. So that's going to be a big part of special teams, is just trying to establish an actual punt return game or something that's a minor threat would be nice to have.
Do you think, Boomer, we're going to have any threat on the special team side? Like, would any portion of our special teams be considered a threat next year?
Well, if we start getting 5 yards of care return, that's a threat as far as that. Bar is pretty low, so just anything positive is an improvement. So
touche.
Yeah,
touché.
Whatever we can get there is fine. Right. Just some other names that I think I really want to see something out of that in terms of just importance. Either, you know, Thomas Fedoni or Eric Gilbert. I just want to see what they're going to do with tight ends. And that'll tell us a lot about, you know, they might be what their plans are for Nelson going forward. I think there's a lot to see there. And I kind of want to see how Teddy Prochazka does this year. Just he's got that another year in this, you know, same offensive line coach. And can he stay healthy an entire season? I think that'll tell us a lot, too, about, you know, their training, their regimen, what their plans are for everyone, how they're, you know, getting guys to work out and staying healthy. So just some names I threw out there.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to Facebook here, and then we can go to the parting shots. But these are the Facebook questions. Charlie says, how much option, fullback trap, power eye formation should we expect to see? And this maybe gets back to my earlier point about the quarterback, is that I could see us doing some things this year that maybe we wouldn't be doing so much in year two and three and four. If we, you know, if we move closer to the Kalins and even a Rayola at quarterback, that's a different style than, than Sims. But, you know, option, I certainly could see some option with him at QB, or we saw option with Harburg in the spring game running that. So, you know, I don't know. I can definitely see some option fullback trap. They showed some of that power eye formation. Now, if we're talking power eye being the actual like four man backfield, full man, you know, maybe, I don't know. But I mean, look, we know that they're going to get under center. We know there's going to be a fullback. We know there's going to be eye formation at the very least. So
percentage?
I'd say 25%.
Ooh.
Something like that, which, I mean, go back to the Osborne years. A lot of people still think, you know, like the fullback was on the field every play. He wasn't.
Well,
you know, when we interviewed Osborne and we asked him about the offense, Osborne talked about how they used to run, you know.
But sometimes there were two.
They'd run five wide receiver sets all the way to, you know, double tight.
Right.
Full house backfield.
Absolutely.
But the fullback was not on the field all the time. We had four wide receiver sets, trip sets, ace formations. So, you know, the fullback to me is probably a short yardage goal line situation and very situational outside of that.
I mean,
maybe 25-30% of the time.
I'd have no problem with that number. I think that's a high number. Just
Do you think when I said 25%, did you think that was higher than what it would be?
I do.
Okay.
Well, I
thought thought I was lowballing.
No, I think, well, it's hard because some things are grouped together that we might see some power eye formation.
I'm just talking fullback on the field.
I just don't know how much. Well, I guess the way it was worded, the fullback trap, the option, the power eye formation. I think we'll see some option. I think we'll see some. I don't know how many fullback traps I think we'll see. I don't know. 25%. We'll see.
I don't think we're going to have 25% fullback traps or even option. I just 25% of the time we might have a fullback out there on the field.
Okay. Fair. More okay.
My, all right. More my point.
Okay.
Kurt asked the recent
way to reframe it.
Kurt asked the surge, recent surge of commitments. We've kind of talked about that earlier in the recruiting part. The schedule as far as what the summer looks like up to fall camp. Fall camp will start here in early August. So we are just, my goodness, it's going to be July here in just a couple of days. So we're just about 4 or 5 weeks away from probably the start of that. And then discussing why Iowa is our only protected rivalry. I thought that was kind of an interesting part. Dave, I'll go Dave, maybe Boomer. You guys kind of get into some of these things. I think sometimes the protected rivalry, Iowa being our only one, Penn State didn't have any of them. So did you have a particular take? I'll start with you, Dave. Any particular take on Iowa being our only protected rivalry?
You know, I mean, it was interesting. You know, Iowa had three, I believe, right? Which was the most you would have. And I think, you know, I think I heard Trev saying that, I mean, they were interested in Wisconsin and potentially Minnesota, mm-hmm. and ultimately only landed on one. I think it gives us plenty of flexibility to have the trips out to the West Coast with the new schools. And, I mean, with this flex scheduling, it does achieve playing all of these Big Ten schools on a more regular basis, which I think is good. So, I mean, I think I'm fine with it. I mean, it wasn't a big deal to me one way or the other, right?
Well, Boomer, why do you think Iowa was our only protected one then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I suppose I don't know the ins and outs of what other schools are looking for in terms of protected rivalries, but, you know, at some point, if you're just protecting everybody's rivalries that they're asking for, you end up with the Big Ten West again. Because I know Wisconsin, I think they have protected rivalries with Minnesota and Iowa still, and Iowa's got three already. And at some point, you're just ending up with the same three or four teams playing each other all the time. And then, you know, you lose that flex scheduling, I think, that they're looking for. So I think that's, you know, played a pretty big role in it, just trying to make the Big Ten as flexible as possible, but keeping a few key ones. You know, I think it is kind of a shame if we don't play Wisconsin and Minnesota with some regularity, but, you know, as we've seen with their schedule, I think we play Minnesota both the 2 years they have this projected schedule out, if I'm right, Wisconsin is one of those. And, you know, since they didn't bother going any further than that, I wouldn't be surprised if there's more additions to the Big Ten, well, you know, by that time.
I think we have Wisconsin both years.
They were going to waste their breath on that schedule.
I think we have Wisconsin both years, and I think it's Minnesota. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought it was Minnesota the first and not the second. But to your point, and it was weird. No, actually, I think you're right. I think it was Wisconsin that falls off. Because what was weird about it was – we've only been in this conference for 10 years and everything, but like it was kind of weird to see Wisconsin not on the schedule.
It was
like,
yeah.
Like it, like,
but then again, if we think back to Legends and Leaders, we didn't play them every year then either.
We didn't play them at the beginning there either. And if it's truly flexible, if we can really be flexible, can we still get Oregon and Washington on the 2025 schedule? That's my question, Boomer. You know,
I mean, if the Pac-12 dissolves after their media rights deal with, you know, the Peacock Network or something is announced, you know,
I think it's Tubi.
They'd be lucky.
You're probably right. Yeah. So whatever the heck they're on,
but it's Freevee, maybe.
Freebo.
It's a great idea on the next Redcast. You know, they might be streaming their games live here, if people. So
why not?
Enjoy our breakdowns of Stanford, but it's only certainly possible that we might see that, and it wouldn't shock me in any way, shape, or form if they're just kind of treading water until they know what they want to do in 2025-26. So.
Yep.
But again, like I said, I did like the regular matchups with Minnesota because it's an old arch nemesis of ours, and you know, Wisconsin I thought was kind of fun, but you know, they had their own protected rivalries too, and you know, at least we're not Penn State that nobody apparently likes. So
see, I would have liked to have Penn State. I don't know. I just feel like we're kind of kindred spirits in this conference.
Maybe I just don't know if they think about us much.
I like the uniforms. They're like the inverse of ours almost, even though blue isn't. I'm not sure how you're an art major, but it's the same blue, you know. And I like their wideouts. I like their tradition. I like that they're a blue blood. I wish we'd play them with some regularity.
And they were our crossover early on. Rob, you've been wanting to say something.
Well, I'm just curious, and this is almost more of a question too, and since we're still talking about Penn State, that's exactly where I was going with it, is that kind of an indication to anyone else that maybe they're going to be bringing in a school like Notre Dame, or maybe eventually like making USC the yearly matchup for, you know, Penn State? I know the first two schedules don't really indicate that, but like, do you think eventually those two schools, if the Notre Dame were to come over, but even USC become one of those protected rivals as kind of, you know, those teams develop into the conference?
I don't see that. Here's the thing. I think they built really good, solid rules. There was some good thinking behind how they created these first 2 years in ways where they can have protected rivalries and everybody can play everybody in a 2 year span, I think, and a home and away with everybody in a 4 year span. It's perfectly built for these 16 teams. Mm-hmm. And nobody thinks that it's going to stay at 16 teams. So by the time you've added seven, you know, Notre Dame and then another one and another one and another one, then the rules are going to change and how you do it completely changes too. I mean, you just can't keep doing it the same way. So, you know, my bigger question towards an Iowa would be, do you think you're going to continue to have, you know, protected rivalry with both Minnesota and Wisconsin once this conference goes to 20? Or it goes to 22, or it goes to 24. I mean, maybe it does because now you're just in a 4-team pod with those schools. I don't know. But right now, they developed a really intriguing way to schedule 16 teams, but I just don't see this being the end of it. It's gonna grow.
Yeah.
Jordic, this is a kind of the loaded question here, but win-loss total projection, TDs, the interception ratios, transfer portal recruit impacts will rule with an iron fist. Will alcohol be sold at games? Not saying it's necessary by any means, or just seeing how it does on volleyball. Boy, let's try to break that one apart and let's do it quick. Boomer, will alcohol be sold at games?
Eventually, yes.
Eventually, yes, as they go through it. Dave, win-loss projection total.
6-6.
Oh, 6-6.
I was wondering where you're going
to
come in.
Rob, TD to internet interception ratios.
35-15.
35-15. Okay.
I seen that wide receiver room they're bringing in. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, Mac, transfer portal recruits impact.
Sims. What's it? Major. That's it. I don't know. I don't really understand the question. Is that we're just trying to say which transfer portals are going to be the best?
Which portal is there going to be a big impact? I mean,
yeah, well, it's Jeff Sims.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. All three guys I mentioned earlier, Sherman and Scott and Kemp. Yeah. I mean, the portal guys are going to be huge this season.
There's no shortage of portal guys that could make a contribution this year.
And will rule with an iron fist. Let's just say that he's going to be in charge. I don't think there's going to be any question that he's in charge.
Iron fist in a velvet glove.
Yeah.
There you go.
Red velvet.
Boom. And with that, I think that can take us into parting shots. Dave, back to you.
Can I throw it to someone else then?
Yes, yes. You lead the way.
Let's throw it to Redcast Rob. He's been quiet tonight. I want to hear a ridiculous rant from Redcast Rob.
A ridiculous rant. Well, first of all, I would like to wish a happy birthday to two incoming freshmen who are already on campus, Malachi Coleman as well as Vincent Carroll Jackson. It is their birthdays along with our wedding anniversaries for Honky and I. So shout out to them. That's really all I got tonight. So, Dave.
All right. I'll take that. All right, Boomer.
Well, don't have a whole lot. Just congratulations on your wedding anniversaries. Now, that's not to each other, right? That's the way you put it, Rob.
As far as we can tell.
You missed that part in the beginning where Honky's been married for 20 years. I've been married 19 years, but 9 to Rachel.
Gotcha. Okay, that works. Possibly good omen for going into this season is some of my other teams that I'm rooting for, notably the St. Kilda Saints, are still fifth in the AFL ladder, so that can only be a good sign. They have dropped two in a row, but this week they get West Coast, who is the very bottom seller, so that should be a chance to right the ship. And like I said, that can only be a good omen for teams I root for. So, but put it on the Huskers this year. So,
somebody's below science. My ruse. That's amazing.
Hey, they're not in the bottom. So
no, they are not.
All right, Mac.
Hey, folks. We're under water restrictions here in Lincoln. Volunteer water restrictions. It's okay. Sometimes you just got to suck it up for your community, folks, and let the yard go brown. It's okay. It'll come back in the fall. We'll look at it as a way to kind of dress up our yard for the football season. You know, we'll get our stencils out and we'll paint our yards. It'll be fine. But, you know, for now, let's just chip into the community, limit the water in the yards. It's okay.
Yep. You can't eat, smoke, make liquor out of your grass. Just let it go, folks.
Yeah.
The rainiest June since the 1880s in Denver. So I wish we could.
The front comes towards, if the microphone was Lincoln, here comes the storm front.
It's unreal.
Yeah, it's uncanny.
There's something going on here.
We're under flood warning for like here in Greeley for like the
it's
last
like somebody's like, got a fan. Weeks. It's
a Kool-Aid flood warning at Rob's house.
Someone's gonna have to pee.
Actually, that's what I got up and did earlier.
That was a lot of Kool-Aid, Rob.
That was a lot of Kool-Aid. Your lips are surprisingly clean, though. Yeah, I would expect more of a.
Yep, I shaved the beard off. Gonna stick with it for a little while.
All right, Honk. Why don't you get us out of here?
I'll start actually with, I think Dave's prediction there, 6-6. I think it's a prudent number to say right now. I've seen a little bit on Twitter right now from a couple of accounts that have said, you know, what is wrong with the expectations of this fan base? Like 6-6 shouldn't be a success. And we've always said this, Mac and I, we've been very clear on this. We won't put ceilings on this program. And I don't think Dave's doing that either. I don't think Dave's saying we can't win 8 or 9, but 6-6. I've mentioned this multiple times. That Stoops and Saban and Pete Carroll went 20-17 collectively in their first seasons at USC, Oklahoma, and Alabama. You know, I mean, 6-6 or 7-5 in a transition season, especially in our case, similar to Oklahoma, actually, back in the day, in our case, where we haven't been to a bowl game in 6 years. 6-6 is a very reasonable and can be viewed in a progress.
Well, that was my question. What does 6-6 mean to you then, Dave? Is that a good year? Is that what the actual expectations of this team? Like, how would you rank that? 6-6?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it was progress. I mean, saying it's good is all relative, right? So, I mean,
within your context, would you call that good? Like, 6-6, that's good. I wasn't sure he could do it. Or 6-6 is kind of like...
I'd be satisfied with 6-6 just because... We haven't done it, first off, in a while, right? And we haven't really even gotten close, it feels like.
Nope.
And I mean, to Honky's point, and I've been listening to you guys doing the match rule stuff. I mean, it's like, I mean, you can easily look at our schedule last year and find how you could get 4 extra wins, not that hard, right? And realize we got 4-8 last year with a broken coaching staff and an intern that just patched things together and got them to play a little bit better. And we beat Iowa at the end of the year, still playing hard. Right. So it's not a huge leap to get to 6. And it's not impossible to win more than that, But a lot of things have to happen good to get well more over six, right? I mean, yeah. and that's where, like, you know, the trust factor, right, of, like, you know, everything falling into place that quickly. I'm like, I'm just, I feel like six is a far more realistic outcome, plus or minus, right? And, and, you know, a competent coaching staff should get us a couple more wins. And then if things fall our way and we happen to not, it's not a cop out, Eric. It's an actual prediction. If I was betting, I would take the under on six, because I wouldn't take the over, right? So it's six.
You can bet in Lincoln now, Dave. So
I've got a 6-6 question. Would you be inclined to move the number higher if you felt like there was different roster depth in certain positions, or do you feel like just Nebraska's program where it is with the talent they have? I guess if what would have to change for you to move that number?
If I had that much more confidence in Sims being as good as Honky thinks he's going to be for all 12 games, I feel that could be worth it. I think he's going to miss a couple of games. He's missed every season. Yeah, he has not completed a year. Yeah. And he only has a 57%. Yep. So if he throws 65% of his passes and runs as much as Honky thinks he can and stays healthy, we're going to win more than six games.
Okay,
I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't trust Chubber Purdy or Harbrook to win us a game yet.
No, that's fair.
Well,
that's fair. I think that's where I'm at.
It also matters. Some of that's factor. What six games do we win? Yeah. What are the six teams we beat? I think that plays a big role too. I mean.
Yes.
You know, early on,
in terms of satisfaction, is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think so. Because I mean, early on, yeah, it'd be nice to beat Minnesota, and then you have basically three FCS teams after that, and then, you know, maybe do you knock off a Michigan or a
Wisconsin, I just look at this very historically, and you can say it analytically, historically, not emotionally. Nick Saban went 6-6 in his first season. Took him to a bowl game to win seven. In his second to last game of the year in the SEC, when you get to play a nobody, they lose Louisiana Monroe. So, you know, and obviously Stoops with Oklahoma, which is actually a fair comparison to us. They were taking over a program that hadn't won in 4 or 5 years. And Pete Carroll goes 6-6 in year one. But to Dave's point about 6-6 being viewed as progress, then go and look at year two of those teams, mm-hmm. at each one of those. And that's going to be the sign. And if we think that Rhule is the type of coach that we can – I'm not elevating him to Saban status right now, but if we think he has that ability,
not till mid fall,
well, long term, 10 years from now, after he's won some championships and we look back and go, well, of course, look at what he did at Temple. Look at what he did at, you know, at Baylor. And you know, there's a reason the NFL
we were going to trend this way.
Yeah, obviously. Right. I mean, if that's what Rhule is, then we'll look at year two, and year one is a chance to get there, but you got to get some wins. And speaking of wins, this is actually my real party shot I was going to bring up. Happy 4th of July, everyone. And if you go out to Bryan High School Baseball Fireworks Tent on 36 and Highway 37 by Pizza Hut in Bellevue, Redcast Sarah posted this photo. They have frost warning, the frost warning fireworks. And the best part about it is
the price
is $16.31.
Oh my goodness.
Which inflation is terrible. Last year it was
right there.
Last year you could get this for $15.29. You know, inflation's just run rampant. But so anyways, help out the Bryan High School baseball fireworks team. Go out there to 36 and Highway 370.
What are the odds of any of that working, though? Like, I mean, they have to have a disclaimer. It may not fire.
We said it started slow and fizzled out.
Yeah, exactly. You light them and just kind of,
It's rich.
The most fireworks in the entire Frost era was the first game that got rained out because of all the lightning.
So there you go. It was fun to get everyone together.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It was.
Been a
while.
Looking forward.
You guys all look fresh and fit.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Oh, damn, did you get some more ink down here?
Yeah, it looks longer. I'm always getting new ink.
Oh well, that's a whole nother show if we're talking about Rob's tattoo fetish. So let's not do that, and let's call that a Go Big Red cast.
Go Big Red.
GBR.
Heard at Sports Network Production.